From WBEZ Chicago and PRX, this is Sound Opinions. I'm Jim DeRogatis.
And I'm Greg Kot. Mavis Staples just released her latest solo album and shows no signs of slowing down as she approaches her 80th birthday this summer.
Give me a one-way ticket somewhere I've never been. I'm rock, paper, scissors, and I'm bound to win.
This week, we hear from the living legend about her life and career.
That's coming up on Sound Opinions. No. This is Sound Opinions, and I got to tell you, Mavis Staples is on a tear, Jim. With her new release, We Get By, she's released 7 solo studio albums since 2004.
Every one of them a gift.
She'd basically stopped making music for a few years after her father died, and man, she has come back with a vengeance. She's also celebrating her 80th birthday in July, and as a prelude to that, has done a handful of these star-studded concerts across the country, which is really incredible to see all these luminaries coming out to celebrate her legacy. So we're going to take this chance to revisit our interview with her from 2017.
You wrote the definitive biography of Mavis Staples. I'll take you there. Mavis Staples, the Staples Singers, and the music that shaped the civil rights movement. A fantastic read, came out in 2014. Who is Mavis Staples?
Well, it's a grand story, Jim. It spans 20th century music and on into the 21st century. It starts with her father, Pop Staples, who grew up on Dockery Farm in Mississippi and learned the blues guitar at the feet of the founder of the blues, of the modern blues anyway, Charlie Patton, combined it with 4-part gospel harmonies, moved to Chicago, taught it to his children, including Mavis and her brother and sisters, Purvis, Cleotha, and Yvonne. They became a family band known as the Staples Singers, performing in churches in Chicago beginning in the late 40s, became a national act in 1956 with Uncloudy Day. Mavis went on from there and her family to greatly influence and provide a soundtrack for the civil rights movement in the 60s. They were best friends with Martin Luther King, would often be his opening act at many of his presentations during the marches. In the 70s, enjoyed a huge string of hits, including I'll Take You There. In the 90s, she began reinventing herself as a solo act. Prince produced a couple records for her.
You know, as you said earlier, Greg, after Pop Staples' death in 2000, the Staples Singers as a group ended. It was a dark time for Mavis, but she rejuvenated her life and career by focusing on solo albums, a few produced by Jeff Tweedy of Wilco, and now the latest, the new one, We Get By, produced by Ben Harper.
Yeah, I mean, she's turning 80 in July and has produced more than 50 years of relevant music.
It's amazing. It's amazing. And I started, Greg, by asking Mavis if it's true that she began singing at age 11.
11 years old, actually, 11 years old when we first went out to sing.
Oh, 11's when he went pro.
When we not totally pro, when we went to the first storefront church.
Okay.
You know, we went out of the living room because we started in the living room when I was about 8 years old.
Wow.
And at 11 years old, by the time I was 11 years old, my Aunt Katie lived with us. And she came through the living room one night and heard us rehearsing. And she said, shucks. Y'all sound pretty good. I believe I want y'all to sing in my church Sunday.
Oh, big honor.
Oh, in the honor. We were so happy we were going to be singing somewhere other than on the living room floor.
Well, when you say us now, it's you and Cleotha, Yvonne, and Purvis, right?
Yes.
Your brothers and sisters. And Pops?
And Pops.
He played guitar.
Pops played guitar. And Pops was giving us the voices. The voices that he and his sisters and brothers sang when they were in Mississippi. Yeah. You know, that's our sound, Pop Staples. And Katie, you know, she dressed Cleetie and Yvonne and I to go to this church that Sunday. We went to church, we sang it. We sang the very first song Pops taught us, Will the Circle Be Unbroken?
Will the circle be unbroken? By and by, Lord, by and by, there's a better home awaiting in the sky, Lord, in the sky.
What?
sang that song and the people were clapping us back. We didn't know what that meant. Mm-hmm. They kept clapping and someone had to tell us, they want to hear you all again. You got to sing again. So we got up and we sang again. Will the circle be unbroken? Yeah. We had to sing that song 3 times.
Wow.
It was the only song that Pops had taught us all the way through. You know, so Pops says, shucks, all these people like us. We going home and learn some more songs.
Mm-hmm.
And the rest is history.
By and by, Lord, by and by, there's a better home awaiting in the sky, Lord, in the
It's an amazing family group. You talked about those harmonies that Pops taught you that he learned growing up on Dockery Farm.
On Dockery Farm.
Now, Dockery Farm is also the birthplace of the blues. Charlie Patton was playing a lot of guitar there, and Pops is also studying Charlie Patton.
You have more time, little bit, stop by me.
So he's bringing these gospel voices in with blues guitar, which I don't know, you know, Pops is innovative beyond belief. I think he's one of the great musical minds of the 20th century because he brought those two styles together.
Yeah.
Great guitar player, the way he envisioned those vocals with the family. Did you kind of have a sense that something different, you sounded a little bit different than everybody else, even on the gospel circuit?
You know, I knew we were different, you know. We had our own style. We didn't sound like anybody else. And everyone else would get up and sing it loud and loud. And we'd come, Pops, we'd say, low, low is the way. Singing softer. And the harmonies. The harmonies that Pops gave us was what was so unique. You know, he had Cleetie, my older sister, he had Cleetie singing in a minor. Okay. Every singer you see out there, they want to sound like Cleetie. Aretha wanted to beat her baby sister up because she couldn't sound like Cleotha. And the guy, William, with the Pips, he wanted to sound like Cleetie. They would ask me, "How, where are you going? How do you do that?" But Cleetie's voice and Pops' guitar was the staple singers that made the difference from everyone else.
Swing low.
And then we had a sound, this lady Evelyn Gay, she helped us a lot when we first started making records. Evelyn Gay said, "Ropa Staples, I don't know what you and them children are singing. Y'all singing country, you're singing." We hadn't ever heard any country, but for some reason we were lured over to country. We were pulled into folk. We had a sound, and then when the blues people, started calling us to blues festivals, I asked my father, I said, "Daddy, why are they calling us to these blues festivals? We don't sing no blues."
Mm-hmm.
He said, "Mavis, you go back and you listen to our music. You listen good." He said, "You'll hear jazz, blues, gospel, R&B. You'll hear all of that in our sound." So I couldn't, that was it. I had nothing else. I listened, and I said, "Yeah, he's right." And then that's when I first heard them blues.
Mm-hmm.
See, because for years, we sang with our father singing gospel, and we didn't know Pops was playing the blues on his guitar.
Yeah.
Yeah.
Tell a heaven,
Now you tell him
I am coming.
I'm coming
on one day.
Just tell my heaven, my heavenly king. Just tell him that I'm coming on the morning train.
You know, we forget, we think gospel's always been with us.
Mm-hmm.
But it was being born here in Chicago, the Reverend Thomas Dorsey.
Yes.
But was there pushback from the Dorsey School of Gospel to you guys bringing in all these other elements, blues and country and folk?
Well, Thomas A. Dorsey, you would call his gospel spiritual.
Yeah.
More spiritual songs, like
very church.
Swing yeah. low and precious Lord, mm-hmm. take my hand. You know, and the gospel, the shouldn't of gospel is upbeat. You know,
mm-hmm.
When the saints go marching in. You know, so there were some churches that wouldn't let Sister Mahalia Jackson sing in their pulpits.
Really,
really, she sing. Move on up a little higher.
Yeah.
You know, she and Sister Rosetta Tharpe,
yeah.
they were rock and rollers.
Just as soon as my feet strike Zion, lay down my heavy burden, put on my robe, Lord, in glory, Lord, sing, Lord, tell my story.
Sister Mahalia Jackson was the greatest. I admire her so much.
Mm.
You know, Pops used to play these big 78 records.
Mm-hmm.
And I was a little kid. I'd be in the back room playing with my dolls, and I would hear this. This was the very first lady's voice that I heard.
Because
he always had the Soul Stir, the Pilgrim Travelers, the Nightingales. And then he had this lady come through, and it moved me on up into the living room where Pops was.
Mm.
And I said, who is that, Daddy? He said, you like her, don't you, Mae? I said, yes, sir.
Yeah.
And he told me, that's Sister Mahalia Jackson. He would say Sister Mahalia Jackson so much. When I finally met her.
You called her sister.
Mrs. Sister. I said, hello, Mrs. Sister Mahalia Jackson.
Oh, you man.
Yeah, I told her, I said, my name is Mavis, and I sing too. She said, oh, you do, huh? I said, yes, ma'am. She said, well, I want to hear you sing.
Mm.
And I said, oh, you'll hear me. I sing loud.
Wonderful love of my God. Jesus.
Divine
love.
Staples Singers Breakthrough on Cloudy Day. You had tried to make some records before that, and without a lot of success. You were still basically a Chicago-based act.
Mm-hmm.
That song exploded. It became a huge nationwide hit, On Cloudy Day, your version of it. That is a very famous gospel song. I've heard millions of groups do that.
Mm-hmm.
And I've never heard anyone do a version quite like the Staples Singers did that day,
mm-hmm.
that arrangement that you had for that song.
Yes.
And your voice, Mavis,
uh-huh.
you were probably, what, 17, 18 when you recorded that song?
I wasn't that old. I was about 13, 14.
You sounded like you were 35. And you sounded like a much more mature, like a woman who had lived a little, you know?
Uh-huh. Pops, that was the first time I'd heard On Cloudy Day. When he taught it to us, you know, we sing it down in harmony, and then he said, now, Mavis, you sing it. Well, he told me, and I just said it. Well, oh, Lord, they tell me now. You know, Vivian Carter, B.J. Reggers, she called Pops one day. She said, Staples, this song is selling like an R&B. We started getting letters, from all over earth to come and sing. Pops came home one time, he told Mama, he said, oh, sis, I believe me and the children can make a living with this singing. And Mama said, Roebuck, don't you quit your job. He was working at Crane Company, a construction work. But we would go to places, y'all, And the people would have bet, because the disc jockey would say, this is little Mavis Staples. This little girl is singing this song. And people would bet there ain't no little girl. Hmm. That's got to be a man or a big fat woman. That's not a little girl. They would actually, we get to the program, Durham, North Carolina, Atlanta, Georgia, Memphis, and we would fool them. We know they've been betting. And we sing it down in harmony, and when my part come, Purvis, my brother, he would kind of step up to the mic like he... And
like it was going to be him.
Like it would be him. You would hear all over the world, I told you that wasn't no little girl, I told you. While they were going through that, I'm up to the mic saying, well. And man, the place would go crazy. One man come up to me, pointed his finger at me, little old girl, I bet my whole paycheck on you. And Pop said, well, you shouldn't be.
Well, oh.
Yes, so yes, they tell me.
Lord, they tell me now. I got a home, got a home beyond the sky. Well, oh,
they tell me.
Oh, they tell me.
Oh, yes, they tell me.
Oh, no stone,
yes, so yes,
little stone,
they tell me.
Cloud
yes,
so
yes, they tell me.
Well, in a
world,
in a world, in a cloud in the.
You know, I've just been blessed. The Lord gifted me with my voice. I don't know a stitch of music. I don't even know what key I sing in. But my voice was always heavy. My voice comes from my mother's side of the family. She and my grandmother, they had strong voices. Mm. And I would get in fights at school. A kid would tell me, you sound like a boy. You know. That's how I learned how to fight.
I wouldn't cross it, baby.
No, don't tell me that. You go get it.
There's a land that's filled with milk and honey.
After a short break, we'll continue our conversation with Mavis Staples by looking at the Staples Singers' successful years at Stax and Muscle Shoals. That's in a minute on Sound Opinions from WBEZ Chicago and PRX. Welcome back to Sound Opinions. I'm Jim DeRogatis. My partner, Mavis's biographer, is Greg Kot, and we are revisiting our 2017 conversation with the inimitable Mavis Staples about her life and career. We left off with the Staples Singers' version of Uncloudy Day gaining popularity across the country, and this led the Staples to their deep and significant involvement with the civil rights movement. So significant, in fact, that we devoted a whole show to that one aspect of their lives, which you can find on our website, soundopinions.org, or on the podcast feed.
We're going to pick up the story, though, Jim, in 1968, and that was a key moment in the Staples Singers' career. That's when they signed to Stax Record in Memphis. Stax was already emerging as a major powerhouse in soul music, sort of the southern counterpart to what was happening in Motown. And they started recording at that point with the great Steve Cropper, the guitar player in Booker T and the MGs. No, Now, those records with Cropper weren't big hits, but then they went to Muscle Shoals, Alabama at the behest of Stax chairman Al Bell, and they recorded some of their finest music. So I asked Mavis about arriving in Muscle Shoals for the first time.
Middle of nowhere, Alabama.
Yes.
Black people weren't necessarily welcomed with open arms there, but here's this white rhythm section.
Right.
And your family in the studio together making these great records.
Yes, and that blew our minds, you know, when we got there to Muscle Shoals and met the guys, and they were just so nice, you know, just so nice. And even Jimmy, we would go to his mother's house for dinner.
Jimmy Johnson, the
guitar
player.
Jimmy Johnson, yes. Yeah. And I realized all white people weren't mean, you know, that they weren't the same. These guys were so loving and so tight, you know, that's what made that music so good. Their attitudes and their personalities, and we in the studio together, you know, when you're in the studio, we hadn't done that in a long time, right in the studio with the rhythm section. Of each other, you know. Barry Beckett could do something on that piano just make me go, shh, you know.
Mm-hmm.
David Hood, all of that, I'll take you there. It was nothing planned. It was nothing planned. It was just free fall. Just free fall.
Just came together in the moment.
Just came together in the moment.
Well, people don't realize that song has like 5 lines of lyrics in it.
That's right.
And it's a 4.5-minute song, and you go, man, that's an awesome song. And then you realize, It's all improvisation.
I'm ad-libbing, yeah. It's improv.
How was it coming together? I mean, it sounded like just a sketch, and then you guys took it somewhere. How
you
did
know,
that happen?
When I heard those guys playing, and see what was so killing, I hadn't ever seen anything like this before. Barry Beckett, he would hear the song, I know a place, anybody cry, anybody worry, and then he would write lines. He wouldn't write notes. He would write lines down and give them to the rest of the band. And I said, what is that? He said, that's the song, Mavis. I said, okay. Never seen anything like that. Mm-hmm. But then they would start playing. Pum, 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 And this other guy was there, too. Eddie Hinton.
Oh, yeah.
Eddie Hinton.
Yeah.
He could play that guitar. Pops would just marvel over his guitar.
I know a place.
They would put me and Eddie, put me in one glass box and put him in another glass box. I didn't understand why, but we were in glass boxes. And what really got to me with that, those guys, I'm just singing, and creating stuff. And all of a sudden, everything stopped. 8:00, it's over. I said, what y'all doing? Mavis, we're going home. I said, wait a minute. I said, wait a minute, I'm not finished yet. Mavis, you have to finish tomorrow. I said, from 1 to 8, that's what they, at 8:00, the session is over.
Done with the session. Wow. They were doing so many sessions at that point. Everybody wanted to record with them. Paul Simon was down there, the Rolling Stones, you know. And so it was just, they were just cranking them out.
Yeah. But so that was probably the best thing for them to do, to get it out of the head, clear the heads, and come back the next day.
Mm-hmm.
Whew, but that hurt me. It would have been good if I had had my little tape recorder going. Mm-hmm. I would have had what I did, you know. But I had to start all over the next day.
Imagine if you had an iPhone back then, Mavis.
Oh, man.
It had to be fascinating to Pops and your siblings and yourself,
uh-huh,
that these artists from this other world, you know, the folk musicians and the rock artists,
mm-hmm,
were listening to your music. Like Dylan was telling stories about listening to the Staple Singers on the radio station,
yeah,
when he was a kid, and being,
yeah,
struck by how different you sounded, and it really struck him.
Yeah.
And the members of the band, and John Fogerty basically saying, "I ripped Pops off for half the guitar licks I played."
Yeah, he did.
Ry Cooder, all these artists who are huge fans of what the Staple Singers were doing.
Mm-hmm. I was sitting at the Grammy with Pops, and Ry Cooder got this Grammy. I didn't know who Ry Cooder was.
Mm-hmm.
Me and Coco Taylor and Pops were sitting together, and Ry Cooder got up and said, "Thank you for this. I thank Pops Staples. He taught me." I said, "Daddy, you taught him?" He said, "They Mavis, he didn't mean he listened to me."
Yeah.
Uh-huh. But you're right. It's really an honor. It really makes you feel good that these people were listening to us. We didn't know it. Dylan, he does. He says, "Mavis, she says, yonder come little David with this rockin' sling.
Mm-hmm.
I don't want to meet him. He's a dangerous man." I said, "Oh, he remembered that verse. This is Bob Dylan. I mean, Mavis, who are you to say of something that Bob Dylan's gonna remember like that?"
Mm-hmm.
It makes me very proud. I'm somebody. No, I'm just jiving.
"Yon come little David,
sit down,
with his rock and sling.
Santa,
I don't want to meet him.
Santa,
he's a dangerous man.
Santa, I'm serving and rest a while."
It is. It's quite an honor. I feel grateful that we inspire, because they would come and tell us, the Pointer Sisters, mm, and the Jackson 5. Pops would give Mr. Jackson lots of information. When the Jackson 5, I said, "Daddy, you should have told him to let them boys have some fun."
Yeah,
he keep,
yeah,
them rehearsing all the time. Sly and the Family Stone. Sly was a disc jockey.
Yeah.
And he would play our stuff, and he'd say, "Shook. We can do this." Mm-hmm. You know, he liked it.
"Sometimes I'm right, and I could be wrong. My own beliefs are in my song. The butcher, the banker, the drummer, and then don't make no difference what group I'm in. I'm everyday people."
Once you got done with Stax, mm-hmm, Stax folded. You guys continued your career. You had your biggest hit, "Do It Again."
Yes.
And that's not exactly a gospel song.
Not
kind of like in the other side of the gospel.
That's
a Saturday night song as,
yeah,
opposed to,
yeah,
your Sunday morning stuff.
That's right.
How did that song come together?
Well, that song, that's come from Curtis Mayfield.
Mm-hmm.
And see, Curtis, Pops had told us, okay, Curtis is doing the soundtrack for this movie, "Let's Do It Again." He want us to sing. So, all right, we're glad to sing a soundtrack for a movie. We get in the studio, and Curtis, he gave me my part. "Do it again." We got started. And then when he got to Pops, he said, "Now, Pops, this is your part." And that was, "I like your lady, so fine with your pretty hair." Pops said, "Curtis, man, I'm not going to say that.
Mm.
I'm a church man. I'm not going to say that. And Curtis said, oh, Pops, the Lord won't mind. It's just a song. It's just a movie score. And then me, Yvonne, and Cleta, we jumped on Pops. Daddy, we got to see this. We want to hear how this is going to be in a movie on the big screen and so on and so on. So we finally talked Pops into doing it. And when he put it down, when we got in that movie to see the premiere and Pops came on, you're talking about the biggest grin you ever seen. And then in shows, when Pops would come out, the ladies would, I mean, it was just like Frank Sinatra when they would scream when Frank Sinatra would, and then he'd turn around and grin, look at me. You know, I didn't make you do it.
Now I like you, lady. So fine with your pretty hair. If you don't want to compliment, just digging in the clothes you wear. I'm just a man now, don't you fear? I can love you now, don't you hear? Do it again.
But that was Curtis Mayfield. And Curtis, he had us, the Staple Singers, singing a secular song.
Mm-hmm.
The first secular song we ever sang, and the last one. Mm-hmm. The group, the Staple Singers. Now, I made some others, but the family, that's the only one
we
ever did.
Like a hammer on the block, the love began to rock. Give the sister love and pride.
What was he like before we get away?
Curtis was, and just the way you heard me talk, he was always whining.
That voice didn't match, you know, what was coming out of him. It never seemed to me.
No, it didn't. Oh, he was genius. Blacker Than Blue, the songs he wrote, man. And see, because he started out, Jerry Butler was with them with Impressions. We lived at 89th and Langley, and Curtis and the other two guys, they bought three little houses in a row right around the corner from us.
Man.
And he would be over, hang over with Daddy. He told Daddy, Pops, I want to make some of that kind of music that y'all are. And Daddy said, do it, Curtis. You just write you some stuff, man. And I think the first one he wrote was Moving On Up.
Mm-hmm.
Yeah.
Hush not, child. And don't cry. Your folks might understand you by and by. Just move on up toward your destination.
I don't think people appreciate what the South Side of Chicago was like when you were growing up.
Yeah.
I mean, Curtis Mayfield and Jerry Butler were idolizing Pops. I mean,
right.
You had two of the greatest guitar players of all time, Pops basically teaching Curtis and vice versa, right next to each other. Jerry Butler, you mentioned. Sam Cooke was a neighbor. Taylor, Lou Rawls.
Yeah.
What was
Spencer
that neighborhood?
Taylor. Oh, man, the neighborhood was, this was the doo-wop days, doo-wop, the Spaniels.
Mm-hmm.
Oh, baby, I need you so. I'll never let you go. Cause I love you so.
Everybody, just like you read about the brothers under the lamp pole, that's what they were doing. I witnessed it. You know, I would see Purvis and Sam, and at night they'd be under the. I always wanted to get under the lamp pole.
They wouldn't let the girls do it, huh?
No.
Oh,
no, indeed. But they all had their own little groups. They had gospel groups too. You know, and they would go, it's a church, Hopewell, on 35th Street. He would let them come in after his service. He'd let them come in at 3 o'clock. And Purvis and Sam had a group, Purvis had a group, Spencer Taylor had a group. He was the Highway QCs. all of them would sing like it's a battle. It was a battle, you know. And nobody would be in the audience but us kids sitting out there eating potato chips, you know, in a little brown bag. Yeah. You know, they were entertaining us, you know.
Somewhere, Lord, somewhere, free my head when I'm through with all of these trials. Somewhere.
And Pops had to make Sam and Purvis, you know, they wear these bangs, they hair. And Dad say, if you don't chill them back, I'm going to cut them off. Next day you see Sam and Purvis, they get them a stocking cap and some Murray. And man,
wow.
But Sam and Purvis used to yell for the watermelon man. Mm. See, back then, I'm fortunate enough, man. I'm telling you, I've seen the horse and wagon. Mm. I've seen the live chickens in the coops where people would leave stuff out all the stores. They could leave it sitting out all night long. Nobody would bother it, you know. And they had all kind of me. They had the coal man, the ice man, the rag man. And they'd all be in these wagons with the horse. And the watermelon man, all us kids would be running behind him. Sometimes the vegetable man, too, he'd give us a tomato, you know. And but the watermelon man, Paris and Sam, they'd, yo, hey, hey, watermelon man. Get your red ripe juicy watermelon here. And boy, the ladies would run to the windows. Watermelon man, I want them. And then the watermelon man would give us kids a plug of watermelon, you know. Oh man, those were the days. Those were the good old days.
When we return on Sound Opinions, we'll talk with Mavis Staples about her solo career. That's in a minute on Sound Opinions from WBEZ Chicago and PRX. Welcome back to Sound Opinions. I'm Jim DeRogatis. My partner is Greg Kot, and we are talking the life and career of the inimitable Mavis Staples. She is enjoying a solo career today that's as strong as it's ever been. Her latest album, We Get By, is a strong one. She's performed alongside other stars from a variety of genres and always holds her own. But the idea of being a solo artist did not come naturally to Mavis. Despite her undeniable star power, that charisma, she's very self-effacing. After the Staples singer signed to Stax Records in 1968, the next year, the label tried to launch a solo career for Mavis. The first self-titled album was recorded with Steve Cropper and was followed up by Only the Lonely in 1970.
And the house is not a home when there's no one there to hold you tight and no one you can kiss goodnight.
Yeah, as good as those records are, and Stax was trying to fashion her as competition for her friend Aretha Franklin at that time, a solo act, they weren't really huge successes. They didn't sink a lot of promotional money into marketing those records. And after that, Mavis didn't really seem interested in being a solo artist. So I asked her about her reluctance to go it alone after that. Steve Cropper told me, he said, you know, Mavis's heart, she just, that was not where she wanted to be.
That's right.
You know, I could
That's
tell right. she was not ready for this moment.
That's right.
And he said he saw you a few years ago again, and he goes, she's ready for this moment now.
See, now I ain't gonna fight no rich man's war. That ain't what God gonna use me for. Killing the folk ain't in my line. Sure ain't no way to let my little light shine. Shine on me, let the light from the lighthouse shine on me. You can't fool on
What changed? I mean, was it just a simple case like there was no other option? But you seemed very comfortable for the first time being out there as Mavis Staples as opposed to Mavis Staples of the Staples Singers.
And that was it, Greg. There was no other option. As long as there were Staples Singers, I was going to be a Staples Singer. Mm. And I never wanted to go solo. I mean, I was a kid. The people were offering millions for me to I was still a teenager. And Daddy's, I had made this song crying in the chapel.
You saw me crying in the chapel.
Dad said, Mavis, if people want to pay you $1 million to sing by yourself, you want to sing by yourself? I said, no, sir, Dad. Mm-hmm. No, I'm a home person. And plus, I would have been scared to death out there by myself. You know, my family has always been my security. You know, it just wasn't in me. I liked better singing with the group. I liked the background. I fought Daddy. Pops wanted me to sing lead when Purvis was singing lead. Purvis's voice changed overnight. Mm. And Pop said, Mavis, you're going to have to sing the lead. I was the baritone singer when we first started. And I said, Dad, I don't want to sing lead. I thought the baritone was the prettiest voice in the background. He said, Mavis, you can sing the highs and the lows. Purvis can't get up high no more. So you have to sing the lead. Mm. And I said, no, Daddy. And boy, Pops had a little piece of belt he had cut about the size of a ruler. And he kept telling me, Mavis, you gonna sing a lead. But he was leaning for that little belt. And I saw he was finished. I said, okay, Daddy, okay, I'll sing. And that's when I started singing lead.
I've got something that I really wanna say. Sometimes things just won't go your way. But don't you worry when the sky turns gray. Tomorrow is another day.
2016, Living on a High Note. You know, the extraordinary contributions of these songwriters who wanted to write for your voice. Uh-huh. Right? You know, what? Nothing else would bring together a group as diverse as Nico Case, Allo Black, Nick Cave, you know, and Merrill Garvis from Toon Yards. You know, how are you going to get them in a bus together, right?
Yeah, yeah.
And they all wanted to write for you.
They all wanted to write. And that Merrill, I said, this girl's trying to hurt me. When she sent her herbs in there, that who's going to do it if I don't do it? Mm-hmm. You know, and she's fire in her demo, you know.
Yeah.
Sick and tired of feeling sick and tired of.
This ain't heaven, help us.
They say my words might get me fired.
This ain't heaven, help us.
What a terrifying time to raise our voices.
This ain't heaven, help us.
But see, I'm not left with many more choices.
This ain't heaven, help us.
I gotta put it into action.
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 But I was just so honored. That really makes you feel good. Mm. And I talked to a lot of them on the phone. Mm-hmm. The head and the hearts, these little kids, it really made me feel good. They were just so shy to talk to me. Oh, Miss Staples, oh, I don't believe it. I said, oh, child, come on.
Yeah.
I'm just Mavis, you know, I'm just Mavis.
Was a fool with my money. And I lost every dime. And the sun stopped shining. It rained all the time. It did set me back some. Oh, but I made it through. But I'll never get over losing you.
Mavis, let me ask a serious and sort of sad question, though.
Uh-huh.
You never had a family of your own, no children.
No.
One brief marriage. You know, you were so devoted to the Staples family, your brothers and sisters and your dad. Do you feel like you lost anything in your own life? Did music steal something from you, being so single-mindedly dedicated?
Oh, no. No. That was a part of my divorce. My husband wanted me to stop singing. Yeah. And no way I was going to stop singing. I was singing for years before I met him, mm-hmm. you know. And singing was my life. It's what I love to do, you know. I love singing more than I love you. See, so you got to go, you know. And that ended it. And I was married in 1964. And by 1970, I just felt free to sing, you know, nothing could stop, nothing to hold me back then. I'm on my own.
But you know what? I have learned nothing to do without you. I have learned to do without you. I'm doing just fine all by myself. Going back to your new love. I don't need you. I don't need you no more.
So you got to do what you wanted your whole life.
That's right. Exactly.
Okay.
Exactly, Jim. And I'm going to be singing to you guys.
Till there's no more air.
Till there's no more air.
Everybody wants to find a birthday boy.
Someone that makes you happy.
Someone that makes you laugh when you want to cry.
Everybody wants to find a perfect one.
Everybody's looking for.
Everybody's looking for.
Everybody's looking for love.
Well, I would have never thought that you would outlive Prince.
I didn't
you worked
either.
With him.
Oh, Lord. I didn't either.
Yeah.
I know. Who would think that? That was the shock of my life. That was a, you know, and I sometimes I still can't believe it. Mm. Prince was my family. He was a part of my family.
Was Prince really weird, or how much of that was an act?
Prince was weird.
Okay.
Believe it. Yeah, Prince was weird.
Different
you
wavelength.
Know, oh, my day. I said, Prince. When do you sleep? I said, we come in this studio and we leave our daylight. I always catch me up. You know, it's another day. Mavis, sleeping's a waste of time. I said, okay. I'm going to waste some time. But I understood. You know, yeah. He was weird, but I understood. And I said, he'd break up too. Mm. He'd loosen up. And he was just so, he just wanted to, he was full of, jokes, you know, he was comical too.
Yeah.
Prince, look at you, Prince's eyes just had some this feeling. But oh Lord, he's the sweetest kid.
Well, you softened him up because when I saw the last time I saw him, he started talking about the letters you wrote to him.
Yeah.
When you were starting to record together, and you were telling him about your life, so that he had something to write about, because
yeah.
you were worried that this guy wasn't going to communicate with you
right,
in any way.
Right.
And he still talks about those letters. And
yeah.
he said that you were like a mom to him, you know?
Yeah. He came out to meet me at the shrine. And I told my sisters, I said, I'm going to be cool when I meet this guy. Everybody talking about how cool he is. I said, I'm going to be cool. He walked up toward me in this little white suit. And cool went out the window. I said, oh, Prince. And then I told him, I said, my mom wants me to kiss you for her, Prince. He gave me his cheek. He said, kiss me on this tie, too, Mavis, for mom. I said, okay. but when I saw he wasn't going to talk to me, he just smiled and rolled his big eyes, you know. And I said, I'm going to write to him. I was writing him 13 and 14 page legal pad letters.
Wow.
And I started when I was a little girl. I loved to go to Sunday school. My mother would dress me in my little cute dress and Patinelli shoes. I'd have my little purse. And every song that he wrote for me had something from my letters in there.
Mm-hmm.
And that song, Blood is Thicker Than Time. We went to church on Sunday morning, all dressed up looking mighty fine. The spirit came without a warning, intoxicated us all like wine.
Mm.
You know, and it's a message song. Don't it make you stop and wonder why we kill our own kind every day? Why can't we get along with each other when we darn well know it's the only way? Sure as Moses, Steph parted the water, and sure as Cain had to pay for his crime. Sure as no one wants to be brokenhearted, that's how sure I am that blood is thicker than time. Yeah, he wrote that for my family. He said, Mavis,
he got
I wrote
it.
That. That's a tribute to your family.
He got it. As he read those letters, he got it.
Yeah.
I've been to the mountaintop. I've been to the valley low. The one thing that never stopped was the love that my family showed. When my mama, she passed away,
My papa, he gave us hope. He said there won't ever come a day when your family won't help you cope. As sure as Moses' staff parted the water, as sure as Cain had to pay for his crime, sure as no one wants to be brokenhearted, that's how sure I am.
That's Mavis Staples singing Blood is Thicker Than Time, a song written for her by Prince. When we spoke with Mavis, we wound up with more than we could possibly fit in a single episode. You can hear part two of our conversation with Mavis Staples on the website, soundopinions.org, or find it on the podcast feed. But right now, we want to hear from you. What has the music of Mavis Staples meant to you? What are your memories of the Staples singers? Leave us a message on the hotline, 888-859-1800. Greg, thank you for bringing us Mavis. It was a gift. Sound Opinions, as always, was produced by Brendan Banasak, Alex Claiborne, Iona Contreras, and Andrew Gill. On Sound Opinions, everyone's a critic. So now it's time to hear what you have to say.
I've been calling you all night long. And I'm becoming best friends with the dial tone. Cause you're not picking up the phone. I called you send you home and still I sit here alone. Boy, you got me
new messages.
Hey, Greg and Jim. This is John from Cincinnati. Huge Nationals fan. And driving home now, pretty bummed out hearing your review of the album. But I have to say, I agree with it 100%. So not sure what happened there. I kind of always blame those things on maybe a producer who needed to keep them more grounded to reality. Very disappointing. Great band with great legacy of great albums and an amazing live. But unfortunately, that was quite the disappointment. So at least I have to go listen to your next Buried Treasure podcast, and maybe that'll cheer me up. So keep up the good work. I love the show. Thanks. Bye.
You had your soul with you. I was in no mood. Drift away and I could forget. I had only one.
This is Peter from Chicago, longtime listener. In regards to your Buried Treasure episodes, a band I learned about actually going through one of your Buried Treasures, I think, Viagra Boys, and I was looking for tickets to see if they were coming to the U.S., and I didn't see any of that, but a band called Snapped Ankles came up that was playing in England, and I just checked them out. They are unbelievable. They have a new album called Stunning Luxury. Wonderful. Their last album, Come Play the Trees, really cool, quirky, aggressive, electronic wonderfulness. And I think you guys would really love them. And I think they're definitely worth a listen. So love the show, guys. Thanks so much for it.
Hey guys, my name is Spencer. I'm calling from Birmingham, Alabama. I'm listening to one of your Buried Treasure episodes and thought I'd send along a recommendation called All We Have. It's an album by the Taylor Scott Band.
Somebody told me that if you look closely, you can see the color of another man's soul.
They're a phenomenal foursome out of Denver. It's got influences from every single genre imaginable. Definitely some big hits on this record. I think it deserves some attention. Thanks.
Don't you wanna love the leader?
Hi, Sound Opinions. My name's Logan. I'm from Chicago, and I recently listened to your episode about bands that are flying under the radar that are not being picked up as much as they should, and I've been listening to a lot of bands that are on tour recently. It's a lot of metal bands like Terminal Nation out of Arkansas, Hearst Collective, John Raid, but there's one specifically from Chicago called Neckbeard Death Camp, and they're a anti-racist black metal band that has caught up a lot of attention from the left side and the right side. As you probably know, black metal has had issues with white nationalism and anti-Semitism, and this band was started to basically trash talk them and promote anti-racism, anti-transphobia, and anti-homophobia in the metal scene and make it an acceptance again. One of the songs that I'd like to point out on their album called White Nationalism is for Basement Dwelling Losers. There's one called Incel Warfare. I think you guys should check it out. Keep it up.
No more messages.
To give us your opinions on Sound Opinions, call our hotline, 888-859-1800. We'll be back next week with more Sound Opinions, produced by WBEZ Chicago and distributed by PRX.